I will call the meeting to order. And if I can get a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll make a motion. Second.
Second. Any discussion? No? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right.
Very helpful minutes.
We will get started here. So we have a couple of guests this evening. And who would like to go first? You guys gonna rock, paper, scissors?
Yeah. You go first if you like.
Yeah.
Well, I'm here,
I think,
as a result of...
Oh, we should have listed. Okay. All right, very good.
Yeah,
that makes sense. You're on.
Anything specific to do other than maybe react or share some observations?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, sounds good.
Or take something home with you.
Yeah.
The floor is yours.
So, great. So, I had like a whole spiel kind of prepared, but I won't do that. I'll just kind of talk. Essentially, I wrote a couple letters to the editor. I've been lobbying all year trying to help get some legislation passed to help protect independent pharmacies, but then kind of like fix some corruption that's going on. So we think that drugs cost a lot because of pharmaceutical manufacturers, but there's another cost, and it's from pharmacy benefits managers. They're essentially the middlemen between insurance companies and providers like myself, and they just arose to be able to like handle all the different claims that come out, because you think every pharmacy's got like 50,000 claims a year, that's a lot to handle. So they're a computer company. But they now set the pricing, and they set the what we get reimbursed. And payments to providers have been going down, and their profits have been going up. And so we got a little suspicious of this whole thing. And finally, all across the country, this is starting to happen, looking into the black box, this veil of secrecy that they kind of like work behind because there's no transparency. And Senator Scoof has found in a report investigating PBMs that there was $300 million last year stolen from taxpayers and providers that was on Medicaid alone, okay? And essentially what it was just around spread pricing. So this isn't taking into account any of the other abuses. This is just the idea that they'll tell me that you get $1 for a prescription, and that's not an exaggeration. They'll give me $1. They'll go then back to the plan and say, we paid Neil $40. You owe us $40. So they'll tell Medicaid a higher inflated amount than what they actually paid the provider because they were previously incentivized to do that because the more profit, the bigger the number, the more profit they made, right? So we've enacted legislation this past year, passed at the state level. It's sitting on Governor Cuomo's desk. And what I'm doing here today was to bring this to your attention because a lot of people don't know that this is how, well, they know that it's corrupt, but they don't know this level of corruption. But the counties are responsible more than other states in how much they spend on Medicaid. So other states, counties pay a smaller percentage of the Medicaid amount, and Ulster County and other New York states pay a ton more than other states. So actually this has hit home on the Medicaid level. So we did a little bit of math. So you take the $300 million and divide it by the 4.3 million enrollees in Medicaid, you get about $70 per enrolled Medicaid person. And here in our county, and I have the little number here from a managed care standpoint, we have 29,000. So it's $2.1 million that was stolen from providers and from taxpayers in Ulster County alone that just went to inflate the profit on just managed care Medicaid. You can't forget then SUNY and Empire Plan and the Exchange and all of these other things that are taxpayer derived. And so when we do like some back of the napkin type math, we figure it's probably close to $1 billion last year that was just taken out for profit. And so what I'm here for is awareness. I just want you guys to know, but then also your influence would be helpful too. If you can write a little letter when we're asking all of the county governments and we're asking lots of organizations and individuals to write a letter to Andrew Cuomo and say that this isn't right and this needs to be investigated and please sign this legislation. Because what I really should be doing is talking to the county about how we can do new initiatives to use pharmacists better and make the county healthier. But I can barely pay the bills to keep my pharmacy open so I can provide these services. And I don't have to talk about how chain pharmacies and mail order pharmacies don't provide the level of care that we do. And I used to have three pharmacies and now I have one. And two of them were closed because of this stuff. One in Saugerties and one in Lake Katrine. And the only reason my Woodstock store stays open is because it's not even a pharmacy. It's a vitamin store with a pharmacy in it. And pharmacies that aren't set up to be diversified where most of their revenue is coming from another source won't survive. And that's the truth. So if this bill doesn't pass, this is just going to stop the bleeding. And then now we have to like repair and push back a little bit, so that way we can level this playing field again. So that's why I'm here, to bring it up to you guys and let you know that there's about $2 million that's been funded profits for corporations just on managed care Medicaid alone.
So. Do you have the number of that legislation?
Yeah, so I do. I have actually like a little packet here that has all of the stuff in it. So it's S6531
okay.
and A2836. That's the Senate and the Assembly bill.
Thank you.
Passed the Assembly unanimously, and 14 senators voted nay on that. So it was pretty much
pretty unanimous,
pretty quick, passing. And we are like other states, and it was Kevin Cahill did a lot of the work on it, so, you know, obviously thanks to him. But, you know, next year we need to now push back a little bit further. And again, starting here locally is a very important part, because outside of the city, this area had the highest concentration of independent pharmacies, the Mid-Hudson Valley. Because if you think about it, the rest of the state's pretty rural, so there's not a lot of places for area. So, I mean, I know there was 5 Ulster County pharmacies that closed in the last 3 years. You know, so
some of these some of the chain pharmacies like CVS
mm-hmm.
actually have PBMs that are working with them,
owned by them. Yeah, so there are 3 major PBMs. It's Caremark, which is owned by CVS, Express Scripts, and OptumRx. So those are the 3 main, and they control 80% of the market. And once CVS was able to buy Caremark, which was, you know, again, our government likes to build these monsters, right? So the shift was so dramatic. The market share of prescriptions, which was generally equal between like the big box stores like Walmart, the chain stores, and the independents, was pretty much 33, 33, 33. It's now like 70, you know, 15, and like 15. It's pretty much completely eradicated it. So yeah, so then they do all sorts of other shady stuff too. So they'll make people make pharmacies like mine unpreferred, and their pharmacies that they own preferred, whether it's mail order or a chain. They'll have 2 different price lists. So they'll have the price list that they pay me $1 on, and then they'll pay themselves $10 for a prescription, but then they'll still get the spread pricing too.
Do we need PBMs at all?
You don't. They're a computer. They're a database. You don't need a PBM in any sense of the word. And in fact, if it was eliminated, it's just another set, a middleman that's taking profit when it's not needed. You
that's
know?
What it looked like to me when I just started trying to understand this. Is
mm-hmm.
It seems like pharmacies can get paid from insurance companies
right.
and charge their patients.
Well, I mean, it brings up a very good point here, and this is the one thing that I always want to kind of reiterate, because it's not like that $300 million. It came from taxpayers, but most of that money came from providers. We get paid, and I'm not exaggerating, like less than my buddies that own Dallas Hot Wieners get for their hot dogs. And I have to have all the compliance and everything like that in place, and a licensed pharmacist, and like all of the things that we do when we're getting paid pennies for it. So they've taken money from providers to provide the good service, right? So it's like we have to remember the cost of drugs are inflating, and that needs to be addressed. But we have to pay our providers, because otherwise we're going to end up with what we're kind of getting close to with the doctors, which is like these big mega groups, and you don't get any time with them, and that's not good healthcare at all. We're making do with what we have, but it's a hot mess. So yeah, I mean, you could eliminate insurance companies as well, and because because like, you know, the idea that you and I would both pay different amounts for Simvastatin when we go to different places is insane. So I think that there is a lot of excess and a lot of waste, and PBMs are one of the groups, and that's our point that we've been making for a decade now, is that the PBMs have too much control and they have too much authority, and the idea that they're doing this, it's pretty insane. So we're hoping to move Medicaid back from managed care, where you have a private insurance making profit on it, to back to fee-for-service, where it was. Because at least then, the government said, okay, we have to pay our providers fairly. And there was a floor that we would have to get paid at least on each prescription over the cost of our drugs, which was, that's beneficial. That would completely change my life. Because, you know, like we service big groups like the Bruderhof community, right? We had to tell them we can't service them anymore because we were losing money, you know? Our Medicaid population on managed care is 30% or more, and it's a loss. It's a literal loss to fill those prescriptions. The thing that brought this to Mary's attention was I posted that I had to tell another long-standing customer that I can't help them anymore because we lost $20 on one of their prescriptions, and we make no money on anything else. We zero on everything else. So how many other businesses would continue to exist and continue to take this abuse? I know, like, the first time probably a catering company lost some money, they would probably say, okay, we can't do that anymore, you know? And unfortunately, we're supposed to just kind of, like, take it in stride. And every year we work harder and harder and get less and less and less. And, you know, it's a horrible thing. We're losing too much. Pharmacists are too valuable. We don't live in a world where you get the full benefit of a pharmacist. Imagine having somebody like me managing your medicines, making a medication list for you, making sure that your immunization records are all managed and everything like that, managing all your refills for you. And then when you get admitted to a hospital, having somebody to help you transition in and out of the hospital. Just as a minimum from a community pharmacist standpoint, on top of educating what we, you know, and all the other things that we provide. We don't live in that world because we're too busy getting 9 cents for a prescription, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's there's a lot that I would love to say about it.
And is there legislation at the federal level to address this as well? Because
So the issue is the federal level right now because nothing's happening. You know, everything is being stagnant. And if anything, things favor large businesses. Mm-hmm. They favor these monsters, and they favor the corruption. So, I mean, that's another kind of conversation. That's why the grassroots effort is what has had to happen. And again, state after state after state is enacting these legislations. Ohio, New Jersey, Indiana, Louisiana, like all these places have put in this legislation and it's been signed. So Cuomo's just got a big pile of bills on his desk, I'm sure, and he will sign it because he's partly, you know, wanted this. But it's just about putting some pressure to get it done before the end of the calendar year so that way we have these changes for next year and we don't die. Because it's literally going to happen. A lot of pharmacies are going to be closed next year if this doesn't get signed. So
what you're saying is that basically, essentially that the pharmaceutical company is committing fraud then, right?
I believe that there should be investigations, if there aren't already, into PBM practices.
Right, because you think that Medicaid, you know, they have a sizable fraud division that they would look into this and, determine that. Yeah, because, they've been cracking down on that all over the place.
Right, so I mean, I did that. I started running fraudulent claims or overinflating the price of my services and stuff like that. I'd be in handcuffs and in the paper. But when a corporation does it, we're cool with it, you know? And,
And why do you think Medicaid isn't looking into this and investigating?
I don't know if they're not. I think at this point, like, I think that was kind of why the bill has been passed, is that, like... Mm-hmm. Because I think everybody's now aware, hey, what's going on here? Like, we didn't know that this was an issue.
And if we were to, if you were to approach the pharmaceutical company and ask them, what would their excuse be as far as, how they're able to get away with this, or did they just flat out deny it?
They're flat out denying it, they're saying like that's how the rules are structured and such, and like they had no good retorts. So like when they would lobby for their side, like it just fell on deaf ears because it was literally just boo-hoo us, you know, and costs and like the system. So like their side of it, there is no reconciliation to their side.
And why is it sitting on the governor's desk, just politics?
I think so, and it's like he has a lot of bills. Like the vaccine bill, he signed instantly the minute that they passed it, but you know, because they wanted to get that done. But like this one is just one that's kind of hanging out. So, so again,
bill numbers again?
S6351.
Yeah, 6531. Yep, and then 2836.
2836.
So like I brought a copy of a letter that the Chamber of Commerce in North Country, like Plattsburgh, they wrote to Governor Cuomo about it, just saying that, you know, they're not up for this kind of stuff and sign the bill, please. And this is just for the spread pricing and PBM legislation. And then we need to change Medicaid back to a fee-for-service type model where it's not penalizing hospitals and those kinds of groups, because that was part of the problem with our bill this year, is that the hospitals felt like they were being penalized. But then bring it back to fee-for-service so the providers can get paid. yeah, that's an easy ask, I feel. You know.
And when was that passed?
Geez, we got this done the last day of session. So, was that June?
End of June.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, right down to the wire type stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, can I make copies of
well,
those
I make a motion that we compose a letter and send it.
I second that.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. I always like to do my due diligence as well. That's why I, you know, put my name on anything. But yeah, yeah. I think that if with that as a caveat, we can move forward with doing.
I've included paperwork about like what I was going to say and pretty much what I covered, and then the information about the math, and then the data from Medicaid, and then the letter. But then also there's a reference kit in there for you about PBMs, the Scoofus report, a link to that.
Sure.
So you can read the report, because he was not mincing words. He was straight out saying abuse and, like, you know, clear that this is a real issue. And then even presenting their side of the story. But it truly was only because the way that their profit is made is based on revenue, and so if the prices are higher, they benefit from that. So now the new bill disincentivizes that. So so it actually makes them want to have more efficient operating and do it the right way. So as long as it gets passed, spread pricing will practically go away. Then there's a million other things that we have to deal with them, but that at least goes away. And then we have their contracts have to then be reviewed by a government group. So hopefully we'll have a pharmacist on that as well, and then we can make sure that when they write contracts, because we literally heard in states that they were passing these bills, the PBMs were changing their contracts to say, if legislation passes in your state, your reimbursement changes to some horrible number. So it's like basically trying to get the pharmacist to not even support their own stuff, because the numbers were so bad. So we caught that, and then we put in the protections for it. But, I mean, that's how bad it is. And they don't even do exist, and that's really the big point, is that these groups don't need to be here. It's a database.
Well, as I started looking at it, I said, what's the benefit to anybody of having this? I couldn't find any.
They don't contain costs.
Well, to them.
The benefit is to them. They don't contain costs. The idea of mail order pharmacy being cheaper, it's just because they own it and they can work their people to the fingers to the bones. And mail order has been shown to be wasteful, because they auto-fill prescriptions and send these $1,000 medications to people that they don't even need. They don't provide
and
any
then it's an
clinical
environmental
services,
hazard.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they never really save money. The money savings comes from the real care, which is making sure people are taking their medicines, making sure that the doctors know if they're not taking their medicines, and only filling prescriptions when people need it, but then having that other side of the conversation with the physician about non-compliance. Like, that's where cost savings comes with drugs. And then choosing cheaper alternatives, of course, than high-priced things, but that's, again, another animal, you know. So
could you talk me through the process just one more time? You have a pharmaceutical company. They're offering to reimburse you $1 or $2 for.
So yeah, so I think the danger here is in saying pharmaceutical company, because the pharmaceutical companies, they're manufacturers.
Okay.
So these are pharmacy benefits managers. So
right.
I submit to an insurance and I say, listen, this medication costs this much. This is what I would suggest my price being. So it's like the cost of the drug plus my service, this is the price, right?
Okay.
They come back and say, well, this is what our price list says you'll get. And that price is normally a fraction of what we've asked for. And recently it's been no concern to our costs at all. It's literally the cost of the drug, and that's it. So the vial, the insurance, the building, the pharmacist,
yeah,
none of that is even, it's just the cost of the drugs, as if I just poured it out into somebody's hands.
And do you
hands.
Give them an invoice then for that?
It's all electronic and at the point of sale. So I'm submitting, that's what your pharmacist is doing besides wasting time in the chains, right? They're submitting the claims to the insurance company to get the reimbursement to understand if the prescription's going to be paid and if there's any, you know, problems and all of that stuff. But then it comes back and says, okay, well, you submitted $15, you're going to get $1, right?
Okay.
And so then...
And then, but these other companies are submitting bills for $15.
So then that same company that said $1, they'll turn around and say to the plan, because they're a middleman between me and the insurance, and they say, we paid, you know, $40 for that. And because it's inside of a black box, nobody knows. Nobody knows that they only paid me $1.
And they're not going through
40,
an audit.
But they didn't.
And I've actually watched this happen real time.
That's
there was
amazing.
So no fault type insurance, right? And I saw like a statement where they paid me $10, but then they charged like whatever the government group is, they charged them like $20. So they were getting this big difference, and that was the last day we took no-fault insurance at our store, you know, because of this spread. And this is a very, very common practice that shouldn't be allowed. It should mm-hmm. be, you know, if they want to get paid to be a database, then it should just be a transactional small amount right. because it's, I mean, you know, that's how the rest of the world works with software and transactional mm-hmm. type stuff. But they want these exorbitant amount of money, and it's just a huge profit center for them, you know.
Is this just Medicaid or is it Medicare as well?
This is pharmacy benefits managers. Mm-hmm. I'm bringing to the attention Medicaid, mm-hmm. and that's it. But like I said, it's like $1 billion in New York State and just spread pricing on Medicare, Medicaid, private pay, exchange, everything. Yeah. It's every single claim that we get touched. And then there's a whole ball of wax that we have to get into with Medicare, you know, because right. they have even darker tricks there.
Yeah.
So,
but not a lot of federal oversight of Medicaid then, but state and local.
That's yeah, Medicaid is state and local. So the Medicare stuff at the federal level, there's all the issues there. Right. So, you know, I can kind of give you a little taste of that. Basically, the way that it works is like the federal government, after a certain dollar amount, they have to kick in most of the money versus the insurance company. So they've inflated the price of the generic. So then they'll pay me $200 for a $1 medication. I'm like, yippee. And then 7 months later, they come back and say, well, you know, we have this remuneration fee that we're going to do a re-up, and we're actually going to take back $210. So we lost $10 on that claim. 7 months later, that how are you going to keep that ball moving? So what they've done is inflated the price. So now the person goes into catastrophic coverage. So now the federal government kicks in, and they step in, and they don't have to pay the bill anymore, the insurance company. So this is another thing that they do. And mm-hmm. we've made a list, and it's like probably 20, 30 things deep of all the like different corrupt fraud things that are literally just lining pockets of businesses and not helping our healthcare.
Now does this pending legislation, does it close a loophole that allows for them to do it, or is it actually?
Yes, yeah, it's doing all of that and more, because okay. it's then saying that all contracts have to be reviewed by a state mm-hmm. agency. Gotcha. So then hopefully, again, if I have a pharmacist in there that's practicing, that understands what these mm. things are, then we can maybe fight for our payment, but then, you know, prevent all this other, these games. We should, you know, it's already enough to pay all of this money, but then to see that it's going just for corporate profits, it's insanity mm-hmm. to me.
Particularly galling. Mm-hmm. Commissioner?
Would you like me to give you my perspective?
Yeah.
Sure.
Sure, of course.
Yeah. Great. I wanted to say that I think Neil did an excellent job of basically, you know, arriving at describing the landscape here. Just a couple of additional observations would be that the pharmacy benefit managers have really evolved as a result, I think, of what were efforts aimed at the Medicaid redesign team in DSRIP, which I know you're all familiar with, going back to 2011, 2012, which was really aimed at recreating the Medicaid system. The New York State Department of Health was going to take over Medicaid, and you may have remembered when I appeared before these committees in the past, saying that as of January 1st, 2018, counties were basically expected not to even be involved in the Medicaid business anymore. That did not end up happening. But as a result of some other initiatives that were implemented, I think these pharmacy benefit managers emerged, and they really have arrived at conducting business under a cloak of secrecy. And what they're really doing, it's not exactly accurate to, I think, characterize it as fraud, but it is waste and abuse, because they're in a unique position to be able to contract as a broker with two separate organizations. They're contracting with the pharmaceutical companies, and then they're contracting with the insurance companies, and that's what Neil described as taking place. What's happening is they actually have the authority to be entering into separate contracts with two entities, and they're the ones that are benefiting from the difference that's arrived at, and that's where they're arriving at these enormous profits. And because it's permitted right now in connection with how Medicaid is administered, that's why this bill is currently sitting on the governor's desk. And we all know it's been an historic legislative session because of the fact that the Assembly and the Senate both had majorities of Democrats. So a lot of legislation that had been sitting around for years, which wasn't going anywhere, had the chance to be moved along this year. And this is one of these really unique bills that I think our county could have an impact by reaching directly out to the governor and expressing that as a county that has a Medicaid share that's arrived at based on the number of people in our community who are receiving Medicaid, savings could be realized. And, you know, pharmaceutical companies like the one that Neil operates would be able to thrive, and potentially smaller businesses could grow, because right now it is a monopoly. It's a monopoly that's being perpetuated by companies like CVS, like Walgreens, like Walmart, because they actually have the network already in place, and then they acquire the pharmacy benefit management companies. I guess I want to say that I agree, you know, strongly with the characterization of what's happening. I do think, again, it's probably not accurate to describe it as fraud, because it's not necessarily a fraud. But, you know, the OMIG, the office in New York State, Medicaid Inspector General, Office of the Medicaid Inspector General, is charged with jurisdiction to investigate fraud, waste, and abuse of the Medicaid program in New York State. So my impression is they do that with regard to providers, and I know that it is something that's on their radar, because, you know, we're always trying to do our level best if we detect some type of practice or policy that's being undertaken by users of the system and providers of the system that's unfair, that that gets investigated. Again, I would say that they're in this unique position where they're not really committing a full-scale fraud, so they've been able to evade any type of investigation or criminal prosecution, but it certainly would fall under the large umbrella of waste and abuse. And if the governor were to sign this legislation, it would eliminate their ability to continue to transact business this way. And they are realizing enormous profits. And because it's really the pharmaceutical companies and the insurance companies, the actual consumer doesn't necessarily get caught in the middle, because you have a broker that's taking advantage of the situation. The consumer is still receiving his or her medications. It's the companies that are assisting the consumer, like Neil and like his pharmacy, that are really the ones that are being hurt. And this is going on, not only, as Neil said, with the Medicaid program, it's going on with private health insurance. Now, I want to emphasize, as a county, the Department of Social Services, our focus and responsibility is on administering Medicaid eligibility. We don't really drill down very deep in terms of what's going on once our client is deemed eligible and they select a managed care plan. These pharmacy benefit managers have infiltrated all of these systems. So we're not in a position to be able to micromanage each of our Medicaid recipients' transactions. You know, whether or not fee-for-service is something that we would gravitate back to or not is a bigger question, honestly, because maybe with regard to prescriptions and pharmaceutical transactions, it would make sense. You know, the Medicaid redesign team and delivery system reform incentive thought that by, you know, taking and transacting a lot of this administrative work to the existing healthcare plans and healthcare companies out there, they would reduce costs. And to a certain degree, they have. But, you know, whether or not those recipients and those persons that are insured through our system, you know, are receiving the best medical care, we could be here for the rest of the month talking about that, because I know that I engage with clients on a regular basis who are experiencing you know, just absolutely devastating delays with regard to being able to see physicians, get diagnosed for conditions, get regular preventive tests, and that's even before you're going to the pharmacy to get a medication that might help you to manage a chronic health care problem. No, but again, our focus is on eligibility, but I make it a point to make sure that I'm informed about these other pieces of legislation that are out there, you know, how it can affect our community, how it affects the operation of our county government. Right now, you're probably all well aware of our county share, our, you know, that we pay is anywhere from about, you know, $600,000, you know, a week. You know, we don't drill down to know how much of that is actually allocated towards pharmaceutical expenses. But right now, Medicaid as a program is paid for by the counties, by the state, and by the federal government. So I, you know, am here to at least support the proposition that I think this legislation, you know, would correct a practice that does result in waste. I just wanted to, you know, share that it has been on my radar. I do keep track of legislation. You know, it's an enormous program and it's an overwhelming system, but this is something, you know, that other states have taken, you know, some proactive steps. And I think the other part of it, you always have to look at the economies of what other industries are affected. These pharmacy benefit managers, it's hard to really be sympathetic towards them, because it's not like you're arriving at supporting legislation that's going to eliminate an industry and, you know, result in the elimination of hundreds of jobs. This is really something where you know, this has evolved and turned into something that has just, you know, made enormous amounts of money. And because at the same time, New York State Medicaid is doing better and money is being saved, it's really been happening under the radar. That's why it hasn't gotten the attention. Yeah. It's only really been a small industry of privately owned pharmacies that have been most devastated by this.
Well, I mean, if I can add that, all, you're my new best friend, one. And then two, the idea that the savings has come, it's come at the expense of providers. They've just cut the pricing to providers, and that's where the cost savings comes. Yeah, if you don't pay somebody to do a service, but then you just pay for the parts, of course you're going to save a lot of money. But, yeah, but I mean, that's great. I'm glad that you're so informed on the topic, because there's so many people that are not.
No, I mean, I do make it a point to be informed, and I do track all of the legislation, you know, that is arrived at and considered. And again, it's been an historic legislative session, and it's been a busy year for any county department of social services, you know, particularly on the programs we administer. Again, we're not in a position to really exert influence on the clients in our community who are deemed eligible and then pick a managed care plan, but we should be concerned about the impact it's having on other members of our community who are especially trying to support, you know, those people who have been deemed eligible and need medical care. And I think, you know, we all know when we arrive at developing a relationship with a pharmacist who we can trust to maybe translate some of what didn't make sense to us about what our, you know, physician or physician's assistant told us, or maybe we're not having the kind of reaction or expectation around the medication that we're receiving. I mean, I know myself, I've had conversations with pharmacists that have put my mind at ease and given me a better sense of why I might be feeling the way I am. And then you're armed with that information, which you can take back to your, you know, physician or physician's assistant, and, you know, and arrive at what might work for you. So it's obviously part of a larger conversation, and I do think that it would be important, and I think it could have an impact, you know, on arriving at a statement, you know, in support of the governor. And I think right now what's happened is so much of the legislation that just was very obviously around transactions and issues that made sense got signed. And now, as more time is elapsing, the conversations. You know, the pharmacy benefit managers don't particularly have the strongest lobby. I don't think they have a great argument either.
Right.
Because nobody is really, you know, very concerned that they've kind of been able to be doing this without it having come to anybody's attention.
Sure.
It's like the great train robbery. You know, they got away with it, it happened, and it really should be stopped.
Yeah, I'm glancing through some of this, and it really is a clever scheme in the most weaselly way possible. You know, they're saving Medicaid, at the same time they're profiting on it and pushing you out.
Yeah.
It's impressive in the worst way possible, I guess, which is really...
A store like Sargreaves Village Apothecary, which was one of the biggest in the county from prescription volume and patient, and we were 99.5% prescriptions.
Mm-hmm.
So when they cut reimbursements by 30-40%, you know, I don't know how many of you guys would go back to work for 30-40% less, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to get out while the getting's good, and guess who we were selling to? CVS. And it's not like that system isn't set up like that either. You know, they intentionally drive us out and then intentionally pay us to get us out of the market because they can't win. And that's one of the things I put in my little narrative here is that when the playing field is level, we win all the time. Like, there wouldn't be thriving chain pharmacies. They would just be stagnant just for the people that want the convenience or whatever. And we would be thriving. because, you know, the level of care and service that we're able to provide is more because I care more. Like, I'm giving more money to the community, I'm doing more for the community, and I will not just, it's a meat grinder, it's like what these chains are and what these PBMs own. They're just grinding you through because it's all about volume for them, and that's all that really matters, and that's not what it is to us. So I appreciate the comments.
They wouldn't be damaged either. The chains for those people who
definitely
only can access, they would not be damaged. You know, their bottom
definitely
line would not be affected.
No, because just like us, their store is diversified,
mm-hmm.
and their front end is a gigantic moneymaker for them. And they, and you know, there are people that, you know, would go to CVS to buy their vitamins and their Tylenol and stuff, and buy their prescriptions from us. And you know, so like they won't be affected. Absolutely.
I think the other most compelling example that you might come across, depending on where your due diligence takes you, is I think we're all well aware of what happens when a high profile drug arrives at having its patent expire, and then
mm-hmm.
it can be on the market generically. So that usually results in a significant reduction of the cost. And what's even more compelling from my perspective is how these pharmacy benefit managers have been able to arrive at still profiting by continuing to jack up the prices that they negotiate, because they're contracting, again, with these two separate entities. So an expensive drug that might have cost a lot per unit, $30, $40, $50, now hits the generic market and should be able to be manufactured for a fraction of the price, a dollar, you're still capturing the profit margin as if that medication was still under patent protection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is really one of the more interesting aspects of what they've been able, you know, to accomplish. From a business model perspective, you could take this and say that, you know, somebody really did extremely well monetarily, but when you consider what this is part of in terms of, you know, delivering health care to our community, it's just not warranted. You know, and this, and it doesn't in any way challenge free market principles or our economy. It's more about, you know, appropriate and you know, right business practices. I just throw that in.
No, I mean, there's a million of them.
There's a million of them.
There's like right now that go into that brand. There's Advair, Ventolin inhaler. There's all these brand name drugs that came out. Generics just were released, and they wheel and deal with the manufacturers to keep the brands preferred, instead of allowing the cost savings to be found.
So, generics to come in.
Yeah.
Well, given that we haven't, you know, had a chance to look at the language of
mm-hmm.
the resolutions and some other due diligence that we might want to do, maybe we could modify the resolution or the motion to be that Mary and I would work with NETI to develop a letter that could go to the entire legislature, perhaps for signatures, or else we could do it to come from this committee, which would be quicker. But in either case, we could draft it. We wouldn't be committing that we would sign it, but we could circulate it by email for signatures.
Yeah.
I would respectfully suggest, too. I mean, time is of the essence.
So do it from the committee?
Well, what about
do both?
Yeah, we
could
do both.
We could
do one from the committee and follow up.
One will go right away, and then
I think there would be support from this. When people find out, I mean, it's just a scheme to, I mean, and I, if scheme is maybe the wrong word, but it's a legal structure that we set up, so I agree. If they're operating within the law, then it's not technically fraud. But we should reform the legal structure so that the waste and the abuse vanishes. And it seems like the legislation has been written to do that. So let's get this higher up on the governor's to-do list.
So one of the things, one of the best compliments I ever received from one of my vitamin customers was that I'm the fox that's watching that hen house, because I do have an axe to grind. I'm trying to sell prescriptions and vitamins. So obviously, the more profit, the better for us, but I'm also watching the hen house. So I will offer the idea, if you guys are having these conversations, I will point out to you where we're getting too much and where everybody else is getting too much. So that way it's a fairer system that is like just, and like the costs are truly saved. So if like these conversations are had, let me be in on it, because I can definitely help out with that, because I'll be 100% honest. I don't, you know, I'm fine.
Great.
You know, so
you're an Eagle Scout.
I'm an Eagle Scout. Never ever forego that.
From Mary's truth.
Yeah.
We won't bring that up as a potential conflict.
So the Medicaid, the way it's distributed, we are required to have the
pharmacy PM, benefits managers.
Yes, the PBMs.
That is what this legislation would address. The state has control and authority.
The state has, and they,
so they
require.
So they permit the existence of this structure right now, and their pharmacy benefits managers and PBMs are allowed to be part of that process.
They're allowed to, or is that the way we're set up here in Ulster?
The way that we're set up at the state level.
At the state level.
We are trying to.
So it's not something you can make a decision that you're just.
No, I can't. That would be awesome because I would take it.
Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah.
I'm sure you would never ever fall for that, though, right? Yeah, it sounds like a very.
So you think?
Yeah, there's a letter.
There's a letter that we can base a letter on. There's some changes because we have different senators and assembly members, and we need to check with the senators. I doubt that any of our folks are the opponents of this legislation. But if we could use this as a template and start that,
sure.
Circulate it by email.
Yeah. That works.
Do you want that as that? Is that the motion?
Do we need a motion? Do you want
to? Yeah, I need a motion.
All right.
And I need a second. So
oh, that's fine.
We could agree. Okay.
Yeah. No, that's fine. All right. Yeah. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. There we go.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Thanks,
Thank
Mary.
You.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yep. I'm out of here.
This very helpful to have knowledgeable foxes around.
Foreign social studies stuff. And I'm a science nerd, so I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Thank you,
buddy.
Take care now.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay.
All right.
So, in regard to resolutions,
yeah.
We have several resolutions that seem to me to be of the nature to be grouped together. We have 8 resolutions that deal with individual providers that should be available to the county to provide special services for preschool children with disabilities. And we have 13 that are agencies or groups that provide those similar services. And they have, we have 3 that deal with transportation for that same group of children. So I can make a motion, if you would entertain it, that we... We group resolutions 316 through 321, and then 324, 326, 328, 329, 330, 333, 336, and 337 that are the group providers, mm-hmm. and address those as a group.
Yeah, can we have a second on that? Discussion on the group?
Yeah, the ARC and the Spectrum...
Which the number on that one?
That's ARC, Ulster Green ARC 317. It's more of a broader question, not specifically about the resolution, but concern about the organizations because the state, I'm told by members of that organization, keep cutting back on programs. I mean, they used to have the school to work program that's kind of sustaining itself, but they would have programs like Theo's Bottle. And working for the Resource Recovery Agency where they could actually go out, they would have job coaches, they would have 4 or 5 individuals that would be training, and they pretty much cut back on that. So I guess the broad question is about the future of some of these organizations. Are they going to be relying more on the county to subsidize as the state continues to cut back, or...
Some of the programs I think you're referring to are not for the early intervention and preschool,
mm-hmm.
and that's what these contracts
and
are
specifically
for.
What?
Yeah, so I'm really not informed enough to comment on how the history of some of the programs you're referring to might be arrived at. Now, in the event that we're under contract, for any services of that nature,
mm-hmm.
the provider arrives at a place where they're unable to continue to provide those services because of an interruption in funding streams, and we would always have a thoughtful conversation about what does the group of individuals look like, who we're servicing,
mm-hmm.
are there other alternatives or options?
So your early intervention and younger school age kids seems to be okay.
Yeah, those programs.
So it's adolescence maybe.
Exactly, seem to be intact. So I don't, I'm not aware of anything, but if anything comes to my attention, and then obviously we have the flexibility in the context of our contracts, mm-hmm. you know, to make amendments if we have to.
Were there specific ones that you were referring to, or was it just in general?
No, I was just looking at the entire scope, but so if, when we do get into the adolescents or, you know, kids that will be graduating into other services, mm-hmm. you know, for instance, RCAL, mm-hmm. You know, we work with them. You know, they bring out a group, they have job sure. coaches, you know, I've had their individuals at the window helping the customers based on the skill set, but it gives them opportunities, and it's my understanding because of the cutbacks at the state, so it wouldn't apply directly to these then, but, you know, I think future program, I think it's important. You know, you want to put out capable, marketable folks into the workforce. So.
Yeah, no, that's something definitely.
So you don't have any problem with 317 staying
okay.
in this group?
Yeah, it just struck me when I, you know, saw it was ARC. I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Well,
and
then.
Spectrum. They're both great programs.
And then. On the resolutions.
So what, you have to vote on the grouping.
We oh, I'm sorry.
Moved
okay.
and seconded.
Oh, we didn't vote. Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. All right.
No.
On the block.
So yes, on the block.
On the block.
Aye.
Yeah. Aye. Good. All right. And then on the resolution.
Aye.
Very good.
Do you want me to do the second block?
Sure.
The second block would be to block resolutions 322, 323, 325, 327, 331, 332, 334, 335, all dealing with individual providers of services to the same group of preschool and daycare age children.
Second.
Okay. Yep.
On
discussion
block.
On the black. No. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. And on the resolution?
Aye.
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 Oh, we had to move and second.
We did.
We
yep.
did
yep.
on the resolution.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Or did we, or was it just a block?
I think he did the block.
We did the block,
yeah.
and then we moved on,
okay.
and then he
did
resolution.
Somebody
same
did
movers.
Somebody
I'll move.
Okay,
move.
Okay, same one. There you go. Okay. Fair enough. Any discussion? No? Okay.
Aye.
We're good.
And then I move that we block 338, 341, and 342, which are three contracts providing transportation to these providers and their agencies. And I think the locations are the people in the resolutions we just passed, right? So.
And these are the three
second
for transportation.
Gotcha.
Okay, so did I get Kathy?
So I moved Kathy and Laura seconded for the block.
All right.
Two.
On the block?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. On the resolution?
Aye.
I'll move it. You'll move by Mary. Right. I'll second.
Second. Discussion?
Aye.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 There we go. Oh, yeah.
And then there are a
more?
Couple more,
more?
You know, yeah, dealing with salary
sure.
and.
And then these.
Yeah, you should have had a note of which ones
right.
were left.
Oh,
yeah,
I can tell you. Okay, so you're signing all of those. So here you go. 339.
Which ones were
with
the legal services?
Right.
Rhonda,
339.
So he's on 339.
Approving the execution contract. Amendment excess $50,000.
Yes,
for Rhonda,
legal services. I moved that.
Yeah.
339,
one,
right?
339.
I lost this on here, but that's for.
Will you second that, Laura?
I will second that one. Yeah.
Okay, so
I moved it. This group is in addition to Hudson Valley Legal Services, who do work for the county.
Hudson Valley did work for. The sheriff's department, or do they also work for social services?
I'm not aware that they work for
did.
Us.
Okay.
Well, no?
Right. So
I thought
Hudson
Valley. Okay.
They just
that
service.
Okay. Alright.
And they do family court serving?
Family court.
Okay.
And
they're good at use them.
You've been happy with them and.
Very.
That's a good one to the left.
I went so fast, I lost.
My computer doesn't seem to be giving me a search function.
339. Yep, that's it. Yeah.
Do we have to sign all these?
Oh, it's because they're in the next bat in the separate group. They're actually not here.
These are the ones we have so many of them, they were divided into two groups.
Was there any other discussion on 339?
No.
Okay. No?
I think we're ready to vote.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, we will move to 340.
Yes.
340, approving the execution of the contract, next $50,000. That's with Allison Krause.
Oh, we didn't include that one?
CPS Clinical Mental Health.
Oh, I thought we included that one.
That was 335. Well, let's go
to 340 then. I'll move it.
How hard would it be to put all these in individually?
You want some?
Yeah, all right. I'll second it.
Craig Lopez?
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. We will move to 341, right? Yeah, 341, approving.
No,
was that included? I was looking at that.
Yeah, 341 and 342 are part of the transportation bundle.
These are the ones that are left.
Gotcha, okay. All right, 3-2, amending the county budget to accept an allocation of Family First Transportation Funds.
I'll move that.
I'll second.
Second discussion, pass through.
Yeah, let's take the money.
Yep. Yeah, all in favor?
Aye.
That's 353, authorizing the chair to execute an agreement with New York State Office of Victim Services for victims of Crime Act Victim and Witness Assistance Grant Program.
I'll move it.
Second.
Who can speak to this one?
We're extremely encouraged by how this application turned out. I think you may have heard that there were different entities throughout the county that applied for grants from BOCA, and they were in their cycle, so this is for the next 3 years. Our Family Children's Advocacy Center was one of the applicants, and again, we're extremely encouraged and pleased that they saw fit to make this award to the FCAC. And as you saw in the explanation for what we plan to use the funds for to supplement the existing services there, we really feel like it's going to continue to give us the ability to provide just exceptional service at the FCAC. I know that you're all very well aware of the children and families that the FCAC encounters in connection with their investigations of severe child abuse and sexual assault, and the impact of those injuries and trauma to those families continue to require that they be treated with a lot of evidence-based programming and approaches that take into consideration arriving at the best possible results, the forensic interviewing, the physicians who conduct the examinations, the advocates who support the victims and survivors, and it's going to really enhance our ability to do all of that.
It's amazing the work and dedication of these people. Not a tough thing. I not an easy thing to wake up and be part of every morning and what they go through and what they see and what they hear. It's just, I don't know. It's amazing. It takes a special person. So,
Where do they do the interviews for the younger victims?
It's on O'Neill Street at the FCAC at the facility.
And they have a child abuse room.
Yes, we do.
I should take a tour there again.
Yeah,
it's been a long time.
We were there when you were chair.
When I was chair.
That
was a long time ago.
Because my son-in-law was just going to be prosecuting for it's a 7-year-old. But he was kind of taken aback that it was such a sterile, awful room, and he went in with a dinosaur shirt on. But I'm just and I've been aware of the crime victims program. In fact, I even had a male friend who I referred there, and they were taken aback that it was a a man and not a woman that I was calling up to assist. Then again, this is years ago.
Okay.
But I do think a lot of the program, and it's because of the emotions, you know, when they step in as an advocate for the victim, you know, and help, and they remember to, you know, take pictures of whatever bruising or whatever, and, you know, make sure everything's followed through. I think it's really important.
The facility that they have here is really
Does it have, like, rainbows and stuff?
No, absolutely. Okay. It's very, very, very comfortable setting.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it was
In fact, we went out to buy decals for the... Okay, thank you. And congratulations on, you know...
All in favor? I think we have to vote on this one.
Aye.
All righty. What else we got?
Yeah, I am. I'm overwhelmed here, but I'm in favor.
Resolution 354. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, amending the budget to accept increased funding from the New York State Office of People with Developmental Disabilities for a direct support program.
And sorry.
Discussion?
A second?
Nope, too late.
Too late? Okay.
You can get the next one.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All right. The last one here is 355, setting a public hearing on proposed local law 6 of 2019, a local law increasing the salary and hours of the Commissioner of Social Services.
I'll move it.
Salary and hours.
Second.
Okay, 35 to 40.
Increase the hours?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a surprise.
So, since he's working them, the paperwork, the documentation should say that he's working those hours, and then he should get reimbursed.
Oh, you're already working them.
And I'm appreciative that, you know, the administration has done a time study and been working in excess of the 35 hours.
I thought so. That's why I put it said increasing hours.
Have you been working in excess of the 40 hours?
Probably.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
That's been my guess.
So, he's here.
But I appreciate that being proposed.
My only concern.
Oh, we got a concern.
Yeah, I have a concern. Is doing this so close to getting ready for next year's budget? I don't know how that's going to impact it. I mean, I sympathize. I'm an hourly employee who, you know, does most of my best work at midnight when I'm not on the clock. I'm going to vote for it here, but I.
It's going to have to go to Ways and Means anyway. So
we'll talk about it more in Ways and Means. And this is also in line with the sheriff's pay increase as well, or
I think it was just an increase in hours.
It was salary increase.
But was it also hours? Because this is hours.
I don't remember seeing hours on that. I think it was his salary.
Was because Paul never took a raise.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't remember hours being part of that. And that had passed out of what was in law enforcement, right?
Law enforcement, which is next.
It'll be next. Okay.
And the DA as well, right?
The DA is set by the state.
We had to do that.
It was the assistant DA. Yeah, I think salary increase, and that was what last year too, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Was it Nina? Nina too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Nina was on. Okay.
Is there anything, I guess we could ask, and maybe introduce John Milgram as a new deputy? You have it down here?
Do you want to vote on this?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I was going to ask John if he had any comment on this.
Yeah, sure.
So welcome on this resolution.
Let's let him move. Essentially, I just started a few days ago, so I'm trying to catch up with all the resolutions. I will be the liaison with the legislature moving forward, and I think we met with leadership earlier today, and some of the structure is being hashed out, but will be explained. And so I
this resolution really has nothing to do with it.
Don't really have much to say on this piece right now. Don't know the backing, although I can say that I've known Mike for going on 3 decades, and his integrity is beyond reproach. So if there's a resolution that's being considered, then it means keeping the best candidates and best people we have in the county, then it's absolutely something we're going to support.
And hardest working.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. Look, you've been a tremendous asset, you know, since you've come on, and I think just your knowledge of the system, and you know, also being an attorney, I think it may be an asset as well. What's that?
A recovering attorney.
Yeah, no, definitely, which gives you just that extra layer there. So I think we're all at.
And you and Craig and I came on around the same time.
Right. Yep. No, definitely.
I appreciate it again.
Being proposed. Well, yeah. Anyway, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Very good. All right. So, what do we have? That's it, right? New business.
Maybe Mr. Cajun?
Yeah, there you are.
In February, I submitted a lot of information on adolescent marijuana use in the county. It was whether the committee was going to do anything with it.
Right, well, that's something that we were going to discuss, right? And
yeah, 2 months later.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, February.
Time flies.
Yeah, well, we have looked at what you submitted and what you submitted in the press, and you advocated very strongly for the, you know, at least the knowledge that people would have of use. What I suggested at the last meeting, and we haven't moved forward from that, is that we look at the materials that the SAM group,
Sam.
Mm-hmm. I forget what their letters stand for.
It is the smart
approaches to marijuana.
Yeah.
Or alternatives.
Yeah, alternatives. Yeah.
To look at the research that they cited in their presentation, which we did view
that's
here.
Strictly legalization. Well,
pardon me.
That's strictly legalization. Why not?
Yes. So, do you have something that you would like to ask us to do?
Was going to be my question. Is there?
I'd like you to have a public service announcement. To inform the parents. I'm a meatball out there. They don't know who I am. They don't know who
I am. Yeah, so I continue to feel that what we need to do, may I?
Absolutely.
The best approach for the committee is to make sure that we have the information that was presented so that if we're advocating for a policy, that we do that. Just providing information without a backing of what should be done about it is, in my view, likely to stir up concerns that then people don't know how to work with. And what seems to be a gap for me, and I'm not sure who to look to close it, is that the school board is the one who can actually take action around school activities and use on school grounds and in these younger age populations. It's not something that I think is easily addressed through clinician visits. So for me, I'm still at the point of trying to find an intervention that we would be recommending. Maybe the Healthy Ulster Council could help us on that. You know, it's a group to bring in people to try to serve youngsters and the community. But I'm still struggling to find what would be a beneficial action for this committee to take.
So
that's your job, right?
Yeah. Well, you're basically advocating against legalization, correct?
No.
Okay. Education.
Just education. Okay.
Basically, you can't have most of your people breaking the law without them losing respect for the law.
Sure.
We're presidents that smoke marijuana.
Yeah.
So, legalization, I'm for. But no matter what happens, we have adolescent problem here. Massachusetts is already selling it. You're selling lollipops, gummy bears, high potency. It's going to lead to a tragedy one of these days. With a toddler going to get...
Well, I would like us to opt out of that part.
Huh?
Yeah.
I, as a county, would like to opt out to that section.
It's illegal now when you're all smoking.
I know. Yeah. I know. But Ryan, if I might, raising awareness about narcotics, is partnering with all Ulster County school districts for ninth grade students on September 26th. It's going to be a day of prevention with special guest speakers, resources, music.
What is Ryan?
Raising your awareness against narcotics.
It was started by the Calder family.
Mm-hmm. My main concern is I don't believe that the average parent knows the drug culture in our county. Period.
No.
Well, obviously, I do. With Medicaid,
I do.
We're
and
top of the list, and
I can see how when you do an event for 2 year olds, the room's packed out, and as they get older and older and older, nobody shows up. I went to a cyber event in the school district, and there was five of us there, and I wasn't even a parent. I was there as a daycare provider. So,
well, one thing, as the child, you know, progresses in age, their parents have to get more and more jobs.
That's true too. Yeah, yeah. But so it's really hard to, like, I don't know what the secret is for. Yeah.
So I mean, education. We could approach it from the, you know, the restrictiveness of the laws, such as we did the raise the age for tobacco. So it could be similar to the tobacco. Even if they legalize it, it doesn't mean anyone under 18 is supposed to be in possession of it. So we could maybe approach it that way and insert numbers about use of anybody under 18.
Well, and I think that if it does pass, we may see that pass in that form at the state level. Mm-hmm. So what we could do, though, I think, is work with the executive's office and with the Department of Health around making people much more aware. I wasn't aware of some of the research that the SAM group brought about the potential for marijuana to cause hallucinations and psychotic events. I think that information is very startling and is important for people to know. Mm-hmm. So,
and also, the younger you start using, the more impact it has on your
brain development. I think those are all really important points, and so that was why I was suggesting last month that we review that research. Maybe if we could get the
PowerPoint,
the PowerPoint or the those research studies that they are mentioned in there. You know, I can pull them out from the PowerPoint perhaps and send them to Nettie, and maybe we can obtain those and then use that as the basis for a PSA. But this committee doesn't generally write PSAs. That would normally be, I think,
directed.
We could request it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Direct. You can actually direct it.
Okay. Well, I didn't. I
we
haven't.
We can pass a policy.
We did that before with other things.
Yeah. But I would be willing to look into the mechanism to get that to happen, and I would like it to be databased around that. You know, providing information that people don't have. And that if you are going to use this substance to delay, and that would be in keeping with the raise the age kind of considerations, that this is really, really very dangerous stuff for young people.
But I think the legislative programs we
you contacted with somebody
to do. We did PSAs for the college.
And the kids in Iowa did it.
Yeah.
The committee did, and it wasn't.
It came before.
It wasn't the college itself.
Yeah, okay. I think it came before us for it came up during it. So whether we had to approve it or not, I'm not sure.
Okay,
but I know it came up.
Well, we've been in transition with new people in the executive's office, and so I think this will be a good thing to find out how we do it.
I don't think anything anymore is what it was. You know what I mean? Like, I think we're just recreating everything. So this could be the way we do it now.
Okay.
And
as long as you work on it.
Yeah.
Well, we did bring it up last month, and unfortunately, it's been a busy month for me and some illness, so I didn't get to moving at the next step.
Yeah, I was in here last month.
It's in the minutes. Right,
okay. Yeah, I'm still a little bit confused as to the direction. Like,
I believe the parents of adolescents should be aware of the amount of drugs that their children are basically using.
Yeah, okay.
And we got 9-year-olds in Sorgan. There was an elementary school. He got caught vaping.
Yeah.
Marijuana. That's what, 8 years old?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, that's wrong. Okay.
So this would be...
I got you.
And with Massachusetts, it's going to be a problem.
Our goals are to raise awareness and provide important information. And the suggested approach would be to develop a PSA to do that, which could accomplish
also
that.
It would be helpful to basically inform the parents on how they might detect it.
Oh, and detection. Well... it was oriented towards opioids, but the trailer that the sheriff's office had at the fair, I toured that, as well as kind of renewing my Narcan certification. That was amazingly illuminating in terms of how kids can hide things and things
they had
to look for.
like a hide and seek kind of thing, right?
Yeah,
and
for all of us kids, we know the things
to look out for, boot with the missing shoelace, and
the kids
were always
one step ahead of you.
Remember our own youth.
Yeah, no, definitely. You're really good at hiding things. Yeah.
Yeah, and there are different things to look for with marijuana use than with opioids. So I think we need to make those distinctions. But I think it's a fair thing to try
empty
to include in
chips
this information.
Yeah.
Cry hard, try to
Yeah, right. Yeah. Not to make light of it.
And what about the physicians? I brought up before about who are the bad actors in this as far as overprescribing opioids. The sheriff did say they were working with the DEA because they are going to start tracking that, but it would be the same with medical marijuana, and there's also, probably not going to say the initials right, but the CBD.
Yeah.
Which I have people that I work with now who are
largely unregulated
to distribute it.
It's not because of that. It contains less than 3% of THC. So it's not supposed to have the psychotropic effects that THC marijuana.
Someone's giving it to their 5-year-old.
Right, well...
who's hyperactive.
Yeah.
And now they have these gummy bears they've been advertising on the radio that are the NyQuil PM without the... Did you hear that one?
No, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, I'm like, come on. So you're going to give the kid between what they're dosing... So I think we're getting a little crazy now.
Yeah.
Well, a couple of things in what you said. One is that in terms of opioids, the prescribing practices have started to shift.
But are they shifting to medical marijuana, or are they shifting away into pain management?
I don't know if we have that data yet.
Okay.
But medical marijuana is pretty tightly regulated.
Mm-hmm.
CBD is another consideration. I think we should probably put it on the... agenda for another time, because it's basically being brought in as a food substance and a health food type of relaxant.
Home parties are selling it with CBD.
I don't know if there's any research out there about it. The pharmacology of it would suggest that it's very similar to drinking tryptophan, drinking warm milk at night. Tryptophan is a soothing sort of substance. Like if you eat a lot of turkey at Thanksgiving, you get drowsy. So you can take brewer's yeast. So the claim is that CBD is like brewer's yeast. And as long as that's the case, you'd have to give a lot of it to a 5-year-old to really harm them. But I think we're assuming a lot, and we should try to get a group like the SAM group.
There isn't a lot of research.
Education about marijuana.
Yeah, there isn't.
I mean, if it's creating a result, then there is something there.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's not like, I mean, more milk I'm fine with because, you know, milk is milk except for all the hormones you're putting in it now. But,
especially for lactose.
I mean, it's called parenting, a warm lavender bath or something.
All these little shops started popping up because it was recently deregulated from the feds, I know that. So, but mostly
the people who are distributors now. Oh yeah, it's like Tupperware.
And it was mostly the idea of it was for research purposes. And, but again, there was a loophole that allowed for all these little CBD shops to pop up all over and really put it in just about anything because now you can get like CBD tea, like they're serving it. Like, okay, it's going to end up in Starbucks.
Maybe we should all do some research for the next meeting.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There we go.
We should serve it at legislative session.
Maybe everybody would be nice and relaxed.
I don't think brownies are
That'd be terrible.
Are we good?
We're good.
Yes.
Okay.
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 Okay. Okay.
Motion
to adjourn. All right.
Motion to adjourn. September for my birthday. He's my birthday person every year.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank
very
you.
Very good.
Yeah.
What's that?
The second best.
Aye.
And all in favor.